But I want to pick up in September the 6th, 1923, and this is volume 16. It's speaking about the origin of sin. Now, what Jesus is not doing here is giving a treatise on the fall of Adam or anything else. He's speaking at a particular point to Louisa, and he's making a very simple point about people trying to live in the divine will. How do they slip out of it? Is that okay? He's not doing a complete treatise. Louisa said, "I felt petrified with pain because of the privation of my sweet Jesus. It seems to me that even his flashes, his shadow, keep decreasing. My only support is his privation, which like little drops of dew sustain the poor plant of my soul, burned and withered by his privation, giving it a thread of life so as not to let it die. However, I was all resigned to his will." That's the important thing. That's the step one all the time, is to be resigned to whatever the Lord allows. "And I tried as much as I could to continue my interior acts." Now, this is volume 16, and we've been told for many volumes that when you go through a period of dryness in prayer and you feel you can't pray, you are to continue as normal. Is that okay? So I did as much as I could to continue my interior acts as when I used to take flight together with Jesus in his most holy will. But oh, how differently I would do them. I would do them badly, not finding everyone so as to give to my God for all. So when you're going through a time of difficulty, it's not easy to do the really fervent prayers, because you really need to feel fervent for that. And so you manage to do them, but not as well as you would. That's okay. Because in desolation, you know, prayer is either consolation or desolation. Consolation means it's easy for you. Desolation means it's difficult. I'm using the language of the saints here. but consolation and desolation are the normal ebb and flow of prayer. When we're going through a time of consolation and things are easy, then we don't have any problem staying with the prayer and making all kinds of prayers. If you're going through a period of desolation and you sit beside somebody who's in consolation, you'll actually have to move your seat, because the other one will be saying all these prayers and all of this fervour and you can't get a breath out of you. So in order to not get depressed, you'd have to go somewhere where you couldn't see them. I don't know if you understand me. It's actually quite important. Now, whether you're in consolation or desolation, it actually doesn't matter. It's just more meritorious if you pray as well, excuse me, if you pray as well as you can in the time of desolation. So Louisa was saying in her interior, "My Jesus, in your most holy will, I unite my thoughts with yours. And since your thoughts circulate in each created intelligence, I want each thought to draw from yours the love of your intelligence in order to place each thought of the creature in the flight of love." Now, she's connecting in the divine will with the intelligence of every person so that that intelligence can be connected to the divine love. That's our great privilege in the divine will. "This flight reaches up on high into heaven before the Supreme Majesty, and blending with the eternal love, draws the love of the Most Holy Trinity upon the earth over all creatures." So in the divine will, the person has reached up to touch the divine love and to release that divine love upon the earth. "Now, while I was doing this and other things, my adorable Jesus moved in my interior, and sighing, he told me, 'My daughter, you cannot do without me.' John 15:5, without me you can do nothing. 'Even less can I be without you,' which is the surprise." Okay. "Everything you feel in your heart is I." That's what my text says. That's what your text says. We would say is me in English. It's me. "Your yearnings, your sighs, your martyrdom you suffer when you are without me, that's all me. but the text says it is I, which is not the way we speak in English. It is my heartbeats that reverberate in you, that bring you my pains, and that hide me from you. And this is why when love can endure no more, surpassing justice, it forces me to unveil myself. Now, surpassing justice is that you're going into the higher dimension of love operating as distinct from justice operating. Justice is what the creature deserves. And it goes beyond that into the overflow of divine love in us. Now, this description here is talking about Louisa living in deep union with God. The problem with all of these writings, and, you know, I shock people if I say to them, I have a problem with Louisa's writings. In fact, it's a huge problem. And the problem is that in volume one, she had three mystical marriages. Not just one. John of the Cross in the 16th century thought one mystical marriage was the ultimate. Louisa had three. And the other 35 volumes are sitting on those three mystical marriages. And we who haven't experienced any of the mystical marriages, put your hand up if you've had three, are trying to see, can we move into this relationship? So we have to understand that the fact that I'm riding on an aircraft does not mean I know how to drive the airplane. I presume that's perfectly clear to you. Okay. So we are trying to get into the divine will without having this incredible basis that she had. But even though she had these three spiritual marriages, she still goes through enormous purification. Therefore, if you and I are not going through purification, there's something wrong. Do you get that? Mm-hmm. Because if we haven't even reached her level in volume one, then we have to go through the purification that gets us to this divine union. So divine union is 24/7, 365. As Tony Hickey says, you either borrow the divine will or you have it in possession, one or the other. I think most of us are borrowing. Am I right or am I right? Yeah. So if you're borrowing, you need to understand the process that's actually going on. So surpassing the justice, he goes on into divine will. You see, if I'm only en route to this experience of divine union, then justice wouldn't want to give me what that divine union will give me. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And so he goes beyond that and he actually gives it to you regardless. It's really amazing. And as he was saying this, he made himself seen. My God, who can say how reborn I felt? She's dying until she sees him, and then instantly she's reborn again. And he said, my daughter, you gave me the dwelling within you on earth. Now, this indwelling starts with our baptism, the indwelling of the Blessed Trinity in our souls. It stays with us as we live a life of grace. It grows with our growth in union with God. And it is permanent, absolutely, once you reach union. In other words, it's with you day and night. You wake up in the night and it's just automatically there. You don't have to get into prayer. You're in communion all the time. Now, in divine will, you get that, to that place quite quickly. Is that okay? And I think the Lord airlifts some people into divine will, into the union. It's only my opinion that now. It's not a ex cathedra from Rome. You gave me a dwelling within you on earth, and I keep you in heaven inside of my heart. So living in the divine will in this union, you are physically upon the earth, but spiritually you are living the life of the blessed in heaven. All right. The divinity delights in the little daughter of the supreme will, having her in heaven with them. So we have the life of the blessed before we go to heaven. Now, all the blessed in heaven would find that if it was possible to be envious there, which it isn't, they would be envious of us because they didn't have this privilege when they were on earth. And since we have our little daughter in heaven and on earth, it's not worthwhile for us to destroy the earth. That's very interesting. Now, you have to remember there Genesis 18 and Abraham's intercession for Sodom and Gomorrah. The Lord told Abraham in the end that even if there was five decent people, he wouldn't destroy the place. But of course, there weren't five decent people in Sodom and Gomorrah, because Lot and his family, living on the edge of that town, was benefiting from all the sinful behavior. So they wanted the world and they wanted God. They had a foot in two kingdoms. So out of respect for Abraham, God rescued Lot and his family, but the wife turned back and her destiny was the same as the others. So if many of us are living in the divine will, the Lord is going to have more mercy on the earth. This is incredibly important for us to know the effect that we have on our country and the effect we have on our world. So let me read it again. Since we have our little daughter in heaven and on earth, it's not worthwhile for us to destroy the earth, as justice would want to do and as the creatures deserve. At most, many cities will disappear. The earth will open chasms at several points, making places and people disappear. Now, I think, and it may be my ignorance, that that hasn't happened yet. I don't know of whole cities disappearing, do you? Okay. So therefore, you put Amos 3:8 there. Amos 3:8, the Lord tells the prophets ahead of time. Okay. And very often the saints who are given prophetic messages, some of the messages are for now, some for then, and some for way in the distant future. Okay. Wars will decimate the people, but out of regard for our little daughter, we will not destroy the earth, having given to her the task of making our will live on the earth. Now, somebody has just prodded me, I don't know whether it's Louisa or the Lord, that this is 1923. And if you forward to the Second World War, cities were destroyed. Dresden was destroyed. And many of the cities of Germany were in fact destroyed. They were attacked by incendiary bombs from the Allies. Okay. That's why if you're reading this for somebody else, you have to give one ear to your audience and one ear up above so that you're sensitive. I didn't get that until I said to you it hasn't happened. And then somebody intimated it did happen. Okay. Therefore, pluck up courage and do not lose heart so much during my absence. Know that I cannot last too long without making myself seen. I myself cannot do it because he's love. And love demands union. Okay. And you never cease to love me. Never, not only for yourself, but also for all your brothers. So I want to give you John 20:17 there. The text says, all of our dear brothers. Now, he's just been saying that the earth is so bad, it's fit to be wiped out. And yet he says to Louisa, I want you to make reparation for all our dear brothers. I gave you John 20:17 because at that text, Jesus says to Mary of Magdala, go and tell my brothers that I have risen from the dead. They had all failed him, every one of them. You know what I mean? And so you see this wonderful love that God has for his creatures. In fact, do you want to know why Adam sinned? And this is only for people living at the divine will level. It's not for people living at the worldly level. It's because he forgot that I loved him. And what he's looking at there is the very first instance of a slight turning away. The very first act. And he forgot to love me, and this was the first seed of his fall. Take, for example, if a temptation comes to me in my mind and I nurse the temptation, then the seed has taken root. If I reject that first thought. 2 Corinthians 10, 5, you must bring every thought and capture it, put it under dominion to Christ. So if every thought is put under dominion to Christ, then the seed won't take root and there will be no turning away from God and there will be no sin. Is that okay? So this was the first seed of his fall, the fact that he stopped loving. And it might only have been in a small way. Had he thought that I loved him very much and that he was obliged to love me, he would never have decided to disobey me. I think that's very important. So what the Lord is saying here is that we have to keep remembering that we are loved infinitely. Okay. So I want to give you John 15:9. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. And that is the way you have to love one another. So the Father loved the Son infinitely, absolutely, unconditionally, eternally. And that's the way he loves us. Now, as long as we remember that that's the way he loves us, we are going to give a response. Because the automatic thing inside of us is to respond to love. Because love is the essence of our being. So I want to give you Revelation 2, 5 to 7 as well. Now, Revelation 2 from verse 5 is telling the people in Ephesus that they have fallen from their first love. They are doing good things. And he lists the things that are fine that's going on in the place. But he said, your love is falling and therefore you will fall completely. So love ceased first and then sin began. That's very interesting. In other words, if love is the uppermost in our lives, sin hasn't a chance. And as Adam ceased to love his God, true love towards himself also ceased. Now, you can see this with, to take a graphic example, if you take people with addictions, what they're doing is showing no love towards themselves because they're actually destroying themselves. Okay. And notice that if you turn away from love towards any form of sin, you have ceased to love yourself. And the second commandment is to love your neighbor as yourself. So if your love for yourself is decreasing, the love for your neighbor is decreasing. So hence in Genesis chapter 3, you get the fall of Adam and Eve. And in Genesis chapter 4, you get the first murder. So the sin against the neighbor. So Adam's members and powers, now usually the powers are intellect, memory and will, rebelled against him. He lost dominion, that is dominion over himself. And Jesus has told us in earlier volumes that the only time we truly reign is when we have dominion over ourselves. And then the higher reign is when we hand over that dominion to the divine will. And then the Lord truly reigns in us. So he lost dominion, he lost order and became fearful. Now, one of the things that's very important in these writings is the divine order of God. And I want to show you this. I have other pictures that for me illustrates the divine order of God. I'll pass this around so you can look at it. Okay. The first thing I want you to see is that everything is perfectly in its place. If you're meant to be one color, that's the color you are. Okay. And the divine order has an absolutely extraordinary beauty. Look at this. It has an absolutely extraordinary beauty. And so if I'm meant to be in this ray of light, there's no point in wanting to be in that one. There's no advantage. So if I'm meant to be in this ray, there's no advantage in wanting to be there. None whatsoever. Because this ray is as essential to the divine order as any other piece. So you stop looking at anybody else and your own place. When you let this divine order happen in you, your place, not only in heaven, but in the universe, is fixed. And therefore, God's divine plan for the whole universe can happen. So he has to put it into order if you want to look at it. I have other pictures if you're interested. But since I'm on pictures, here's another one. How would you show a picture of living in the divine will? I'm eating out of his hands. He says, you want it, I'll do it. Quite literally. And that's also a picture of Isaiah that were carved into the palm of his hands as well. So you pass that around. I have other pictures as well, because I keep looking for pictures, because a picture to me says much, much more than 1,000 words. Because once you look at the divine order of God, you'll never try to be in anybody else's place. Your own place is perfect. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Hence, you've heard me saying for a long time that the Lord does not want us to be carbon copies of each other. Not at all. Because if we're all carbon copies of each other, that picture is very boring, isn't it? It's all the same colour and it's all the same shape. And he has this infinite variety in the whole thing. And therefore, he needs an absolutely unique individual response from each one of us. Therefore, none of us will be responding in the same way as other people are responding. So we have to be careful not to allow ourselves to become copycats of anything. Does that make sense? I hope I've said enough on that now. It's to allow this divine order to happen inside of us, but also among us. And when we start letting this divine order operate more and more among us, what's going to happen is the unique gift of each person is going to come out. You mightn't even know you have a unique gift, but it'll actually come out, because you'll find yourself that I fit better in this groove than in that one. And if you operate in the groove that grace has put you into, then what God wants to do through you will actually happen. That's a pre-Drumontine speech, sorry. So let's come back to this. So when Adam turned away from love, he lost dominion and order, and he became fearful. Now, he's outside of God's order, and therefore he's outside of God's sense of security. And the fearful thing is, you don't know what to do with yourself, and you don't know where to place yourself. You can't be God for yourself. And I find it very interesting that shifting away from love, you get into fear. And St. John says in his first letter, now I can't give you the quotation, perfect love casts out fear. Okay. So when you get into the divine union that's in the divine will, fear disappears. That's one of the signs that you are in that union, is that the fear disappears. You're not afraid of hell, you're not afraid of purgatory, you're not afraid of death, you're not afraid of this, that and the other. And you have people on the earth who are afraid of everything. They're afraid of their own shadow. So what the Lord is showing here is someone turning away slowly, initially, and what they lose in that turning away. So if fear comes back to us, we have shifted from love, because perfect love casts out fear. Not only this, but true love towards other creatures cease as well. Now, true love means your ability to really give to others. Your ability to really see the other person in their own shoes and to respond to that person in their own shoes. That you're not trying to make them a copy of yourself. You're not trying to control them or dominate them or anything else. So notice, if you go back two lines, with this ceasing of love, true love towards yourself disappears, and therefore true love towards your neighbour disappears. Now, as you watch society outside losing faith in God, you see fear increasing, violence increasing, and love of neighbour absolutely disappearing. Have you noticed? Yeah. Okay, so it's being described here. While I created him with the same love, that's divine love, the same love that reigned among the divine persons. I created him with divine love. And so he has descended from an absolutely frightening height, by which one was to be the image of the other. So Genesis 1:27, we were created in the image of God. Genesis 1:27. And Romans 8:29, we are redeemed into the image of Christ. That means reordered into the image of Christ. So this divine love that's poured into us actually makes us the image one of the other. So if divine love is coming out of us to each other, it's the surest sign that we are in union with God and that God is free to manifest himself. Because remember, we used to sing it in Latin, ubi caritas et amor Deus ibi est, where love and kindness is, God is there. It was one of the lovely things we used to sing. I had created him with the same love, that's divine love, that reigns among the divine persons, by which one was to be the image of the other. One was to be the happiness and the joy and the life of the other. Now, it was not communicated to me in my childhood that I was to be the happiness and joy and life of God. Was it communicated to you? No. Because they didn't know this stuff. They didn't understand it at all. In fact, after the Second World War, there was quite a distorted image of God as the punisher, you know. This is why, in coming upon the earth, the thing on which I place the greatest importance was that they love one another. John 13:34-35. This is my new commandment, that you love one another in the same way as I loved you. So that means we love one another with divine love. So again, a pre-Drumantine comment. When we gather in Drumantine, if we love one another with divine love, miracles will happen. Is that okay? But we have to actually consciously love one another. It doesn't matter whether you like the person or not. That's a different subject. It doesn't matter whether you approve of them or anything else, or whether you see faults or failings in them. We have to choose to love one another at this divine level, and then God can work miracles. Now, I've seen that happen before at a different kind of conference. So I place the greatest importance of that they love one another as they were loved by me. Now, that's John 15:9 again. In order to give them my first love and to let the love of the most holy Trinity hover over the earth. Now, when love hovers over the earth, there will be life and healing and growth and reordering back into God's will and growth and everything. It'll be fantastic. Therefore, in all of your pains and privations, never forget that I love you very much. Now, look at this emphasis. That I love you, that is personal, very much. So as to never forget to love me, that's our response. And as the daughter of our will, you have the task to love me for all souls, past, present and future. In this way, you will remain in the order of the divine will, you need to add, and you will fear nothing. So I think that message is horrendously important. Is that OK? I just want to go back over something. And it's only when I say it, you'll say, yes, OK, OK, OK. Notice the reason why he wants us to love one another is that the love of the Most Holy Trinity will hover over the earth. OK, you're told in the book of Genesis, chapter 1, page 1. Verse 2. The second verse in the Bible. That the Spirit of God hovered over what was going to become creation. And the Spirit of God hovering means that the power of God is going to bring something incredibly important. You come to the time of the incarnation, though we're jumping a few millennia, and you have the Spirit of God hovering over Blessed Mother in order to bring about the miracle of the incarnation. When you go to the baptism of Jesus, you have the Spirit of God hovering over him so that he can bring about the whole purpose of redemption. Fast forward, when you come to Pentecost, the Spirit of God is hovering over the church to bring about the miracle of the growth and spread of the church. Now you fast forward 2,000 years and the Spirit of God in love wants to hover over the human race to bring about a new era. Does that make sense? Yeah. Just want to give a little summary of the Bible just in case you'd miss it. And you see, the beautiful thing is he says it in such simple words that you wouldn't realise he's summarising the whole thing for you. Okay, so to go to a completely different topic, September the 9th, 1923, the divine will is hell for Satan. Very interesting. What makes hell for him? So Louisa said, I still felt some fear that who knows, it might not be my adorable Jesus who deigned to speak to me by manifesting to me so many sublime truths, especially on the divine will. Now, the reason why she has to discern this over and over and over again is that she's the first person to receive it. The priests around her don't know what she's talking about. They have to learn from her what these messages are and where they're going. So they can't tell her ahead of time, but they can send her back all the time to discern, which is very important. So especially the stuff on the divine will, you see, that's completely new. So in case it would be the enemy in order to deceive me. And while it seems that he flings me up high with so many truths, he might hurl me down into the abyss in the end. Understood. And I said to myself, my Jesus, free me from the hands of the enemy. I don't want to know anything. All I care about is to save my soul. Now, I laugh when I read that. Why? Because she has slipped back below volume one. Volume one, she was saving her soul before the Lord lifted her up. And you stop looking after yourself and you start looking after his glory and the salvation of the world and all the rest of it. But what it illustrates for us is that the moment we get into any little bit of crisis, we slip back very quickly. It's just that the Lord is holding her with his two hands, so she's not going to fall anywhere. Okay, that's like you taking a small child trying to learn how to walk and you're holding the two hands so they're not going to hurt themselves. And blessed Jesus, moving in my interior, told me. moving in my interior now is Luke 17:21, the kingdom of God is within you. Okay, so moving in my interior, Jesus told me, my daughter, why do you fear? Now, even at her exalted level, she can still go back into fear. Now, I love when she struggles. I don't know about you, because it consoles me enormously. And I say, Lord, when I go through it, it's okay. She went through it as well. Don't you know that the thing which the infernal serpent knows the least about is my will? Why is that? Because ab aeterno, he rebelled against God's will and therefore he knows nothing about it. In fact, he did not want to do it. So that's the rebellion of the angels. And by not doing it, he did not know it. Now, to know it means you don't have the experience and therefore you don't know what to do with it. Nor did he love it. So in the divine will, we start off by doing the divine will, getting to know the divine will, and getting to love it. It's the exact opposite of Satan's experience. And even less did Satan penetrate the secrets of my inscrutable volition in order to know the effects and the value of my will. And if he doesn't know them, how could he speak about it? Even more, the thing that he abhors the most is that the creature will do my will. I heard a wonderful story from a person recently. I can't tell you whether they are male or female or what country or anything else. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. But they were being attacked by Satan. And Satan was sort of saying, these are my words now. They're not anybody else's words. It's my summary of what I heard. And Satan was sort of saying, you know, who do you think you are? She says, no future for you with the past that you've had. And the person started listening to the Lord, how do I respond to this? And started to laugh. Now with Satan actively attacking. I said, why did you laugh? And the person said to me, the Lord said, tell him that his future is worse. And the person said, when I told Satan that his future was worse, he disappeared. Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
Who do you think you are? You see, a saint is a person with a past, and a sinner is a person with a terrible future. A sinner meaning somebody committed to sin. Do you know what I mean? And so Satan was the sinner with a terrible future. And the person whom the Lord had redeemed had a past, but a wonderful future. Of course, that's Ezekiel 16. How could he know the inscrutable secrets of the divine volition when he's never done it? In order to know the effects and the value of my will. And if he does not know them, how could he speak about them? Even more, the thing that he abhors the most is that the creature will do my will. The envy of the demons is that we will take their places in heaven, the places they have vacated. So they'd prefer you not to have it. He doesn't care about whether the soul, watch this now and put a big NB about 2 feet high. He doesn't care about whether the soul prays, goes to confession, receives communion, does penance, and even works miracles. But the thing that harms him the most is that the person will do my will. That's extremely important. I couldn't underline it enough, because if you go back into the volumes, approximately volume 8 to 10, Louisa was struggling with the fact that she was no longer suffering the crucifixion and all of this, and she thought she was being completely useless. And the Lord said to her, look, it's not the suffering. Suffering in itself is not it. It's whether I want you to do it. So it's suffering in my will. And if my will doesn't want you to suffer, it's my will that's important. So the Lord does different things with us. In fact, as Satan rebelled against my will, so was hell created. Note, I want you to note the next two words and ring them. You may never have realized it before. It was created in him. Now, that is actually correct. Because when people go through a terrible time, supposing a family breakup, and they all say it's hell. And what they're saying is they are hellishly unhappy. And that's correct. The hell is inside of you. And when a person is taken out of that situation and brought into grace and into holiness, then they experience heaven, meaning you're going towards love more and more and more. So hell is the absence of love and heaven is the presence of love. God is love. So hell was created in him. His unhappy state, the rage that consumes him. Isn't that interesting? So my will is hell for him. And every time he sees a soul who is submitted to my will, knowing its qualities, value and sanctity, he feels his hell being doubled. Now, that's only a manner of speech. The hell isn't doubled, you know what I mean? But in other words, he feels it all the more. Because he sees the paradise, the happiness and the peace that he lost being created in the soul. That's fantastic. Mm. So I want to give you Ezekiel 16 to read as a background to this, because there you're told that the person who was a sinner and who turns to the Lord, that everything of the past is just wiped away and the Lord only looks at where you're going, that he doesn't look at your past. But if someone who was good then turns to evil, all the good in your past is forgotten and where you're going, which is down to hell, is what he looks at. And it looks awfully unjust on the second side, because we think that because we did some good in the past that we should be let off the hook. And he says, no, justice is the same on both sides. And the more my will is known, this is the whole reason for studying all of this material, the more tormented and furious he becomes. So if you never get any kickback from him, get worried and ask a bit of advice, will you? So how can he possibly speak to you about my will if it forms his hell? And if he did speak to you, his words would form hell in you, because you can only give what you have. Because he knows my will only to hate it, not to love it. And what is hated never brings happiness and peace. But behind all of this, I think the Lord is saying to us to look at the way that people who have walked away from God and are feeling so disturbed in conscience about it, don't want to look, don't want to repent, how they will lash back at the believer. The hell in them cannot tolerate the heaven in you. Does that make sense? Mm. So just understand it as a reason for persecution. And besides, Satan's word is empty of grace. Therefore, he cannot confer grace to do my will. You'll never grow in holiness by listening to Satan. You just tell him to get lost and tell him that his future is pretty rough. Okay. So let's come to September the 14th, 1923. And it's the purpose for which man was created was for him to always revolve around God. Now look at it. You've been given the essence of the message there. As the earth revolves around the sun. Now the earth continuously revolves around the sun. It never stops. And if it stops, it will disintegrate. Okay. So Louisa said, I was thinking of how all things revolve around the sun. The earth, ourselves, all creatures, the sea, plants, everyone. In some, we all revolve around the sun. It's a funny statement she's making there, because we don't do it separately. It's the earth that revolves around the sun, and that gravity is holding you to the earth. So whatever the earth does, you do. And because we revolve around the sun, we are illuminated and we receive its heat. So the sun reflects its burning rays upon all, and we, the whole of creation, by revolving around the sun, enjoy its light and receive part of the effects and good which the sun contains. Now notice part, you can't receive it all. Mm-hmm. Not actually possible. Now, how many things do not revolve around the divine sun? All do. The angels, the saints, men and all created things, even our Queen Mother. Does she perhaps not hold the first round in which, rapidly revolving around the divine will, she absorbs all the reflections of the eternal sun? Now, while I was thinking about this, my divine Jesus moved in my interior. And clasping me all to himself, he told me, my daughter, this was precisely the purpose for which I created man. Try telling that to somebody who doesn't know the divine will writings, and they'll think you've lost it, won't they? Mm-hmm. That you were created to revolve around the sun. They'll say, where did you go to school? My daughter, this was precisely the purpose for which I created man, that he would always revolve around me. And I, like the sun, why around the Lord? Because he's the source of our lives, the source of absolutely everything. And I, like the sun, being at the center of the round, would reflect in him my light, my love, my likeness and all my happiness. In other words, the sun is the source of life on earth. So the Lord is the source of our life. At each round of his, I would give him ever new contentments, beauty, and arrows more burning. Now, the more burning arrows coming from the Lord, what do you think it is? It's love. And when you do the Hours of the Passion, you hear Louisa describing the burning love that was inside of him. Before man sinned, my divinity was not hidden to man. Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. Because by revolving around me, he was my reflection. And therefore, he was the little light. So it was as though natural that I, being the great sun, the little light, would be able to receive the reflections of my light. But as soon as he sinned, he stopped revolving around me. That's where the disintegration begins. We've lost the divine order. and were not in our correct place in the whole order of things. He stopped revolving around me. His little light became dark. Now, beside that, I want to give you Matthew 6, verses 22 to 23, where Jesus said, if your light is darkness, how very dark it's going to be in your interior. So his little light became dark, he became blind, and he lost the light to be able to see my divinity in his mortal flesh, as much as a creature is capable of. So much so that in coming to redeem man, I took on mortal flesh in order to let myself be seen. Now notice we could only see flesh. We have moved so far from being spiritual beings that we can now only see material things. That tells you how much we have deteriorated as a race. So I took on mortal flesh in order to let myself be seen. Not only because man had sinned with the flesh, and with the flesh I was to expiate, but because he lacked the eyes to be able to see my divinity. Now you get back the eyes through contemplation. Is that okay? Contemplation and adoration of the Eucharist, you get back the eyes. This is so true that my divinity, which dwelled in my humanity, that's Colossians 2:19, all the divinity dwelled in the humanity of Jesus, Colossians 2:19. That my divinity, which dwelled in my humanity, could only unleash through glimpses and flashes a few rays of light from my divinity. Now, while Jesus was on earth, those few rays were the night he showed his apostles that he walked on water. And they saw him walking on water. The day they saw him transfigured on Mount Tabor. That was during his lifetime. Then after the resurrection, when they had been purified enormously, then they were able to see him in his resurrection, and they were able to see him in his ascension. Tremendous gift for the church. So see then what great evil sin is. It is for man to lose his round around his creator, to annul the purpose of his creation, to be transmuted from light into darkness, from beautiful into ugly. It is such a great evil that with all of my redemption, I could not restore to him the eyes to be able to see my divinity in his mortal flesh. Why is that? It's because so few people actually take enough of the redemption to be purified sufficiently to be able to see. But the saints have seen, at least momentarily. Okay. So I could not restore to him the eyes to be able to see my divinity in his mortal flesh. But only when this flesh, undone and pulverized by death, could rise again on the day of judgment. So the whole of humanity is only going to see him again on the day of judgment. Sad, isn't it? What would happen if the whole of creation could fall short of its revolution around the sun? All things would be upset. They would lose light because they get light from the sun. They would lose harmony. They would lose beauty. Each would bump into each other. In other words, you'd have chaos. And even if the sun were present, because they would not be revolving around it, the sun would be as though dead for the whole of creation. In other words, not able to give its life-giving fruits at all. Now, because of original sin, man lost his round around his creator, and therefore he lost the order and the dominion of himself. He lost the light. Now, since the beginning of the church, saints have referred to growing in holiness as enlightenment, that you receive more and more light. In other words, that your interior receives more and more light. Okay. And when you go into the higher volumes of Louisa, that is the over 20s, isn't that? You'll find that Louisa becomes more and more light. And therefore, she's able to describe the divine will more and more clearly. And I love the passages where she says, this is an endless light. There's no way out. She's like, to me, she's like Alice in Wonderland. You know what I mean? Having arrived in this place, and Jesus says to her, there is no way out. You are permanently here. In other words, you are having heaven now. The only difference is that on earth you still suffer, because the body has to go through its things. So every time a human being sins, not only does he not revolve around his God, but he makes his stops around the goods of redemption. You're not even picking up the helps that Jesus has made available for us in redemption. Which, like a new son, came to bring him forgiveness, escape and salvation. But do you know who it is that never stops around her son? It is the soul who does my will and lives in it. She always runs. She never stops. She receives all the reflections of my humanity and also the reflections of the flashes of my divinity as well. So I'm going to stop there for tonight.